kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Cole's going to be here a bit later on. Party cast, blah, 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 all that fun jazz. Fun that she's not here at the beginning for $5.99. But Tim, you're here. How are you doing?
Thank goodness. I had like a panic earlier today that I thought tonight was $600. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm supposed to be on that show. And I was like, because I thought the Xbox thing was today. I thought it was Tuesday and not Thursday, and that I'd forgotten about it. I'm like, oh, shit, the Xbox thing is tonight. Oh, shit, that means 600 is tonight. Oh, shit, I am not ready for this.
Nope, you're 2 days early. You're still good.
Yeah, thank goodness. I got more time to recover. We spent the weekend hunkered because we were afraid that my wife had COVID.
Oh, no.
But the test came back negative, so it seems like she doesn't have COVID. But, yeah, well, like, she was kind of sick last week. You know, and it didn't seem like COVID. And then she suddenly lost her sense of taste. And we were like, oh, shit. So she went and got tested. And then I went and got tested. And that's a pleasant feeling if you haven't gotten COVID tested yet.
I have not. I've seen videos, though, and it does not look very entertaining.
It's like, you know, it's like getting water up your nose is what it feels like, basically. Because they stick that swab way up in there. But it's fine. Like the nurse did it, you know, got a good firm hold on the back of my neck. Like she was about to lay in some forearms to my chin or pull my head down for some knee strikes. But instead she just, you know, whisked a long Q-tip up my nose and into my brain and then swished it around a bit. And then, yeah, it just kind of makes your eyes water and makes you go, but it's fine.
You're alive. Yeah. That's the important thing. You're alive. Yeah, you don't have COVID.
But you know, the recommendation, like the actual recommendation wasn't like, oh, you don't have COVID. Like they were like, oh no, you probably have COVID. You shouldn't send your child into, you know, daycare and thus your husband shouldn't go into work. So like she sequestered herself to the upstairs quarters of the house. And so it was just like me and the child for 4 days straight. And like, along with the cloud of COVID hanging over, it was just, Damn. It was something of a weekend, but you know, and tests came back negative and they're mostly accurate. So now life can go on.
Question mark.
Question mark. Yeah. I don't know. Her sense of taste is coming back. So I, you know,
oh, that's good.
Whatever.
That's gotta be a good sign, right?
Yeah. It has to be, right? Yeah, maybe it just seems like a weird thing to, yeah. So, whatever, everything seems fine now. So, bullet dodged, question mark.
With COVID going around, every time anyone gets sick, that's immediately the question. It doesn't matter what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately, you're like, oh, shit, is this it?
Has it found me in my
home? Do I have 4 days left? Is that it?
Yeah. What the heck was I going to say? Yeah, you know, I mean, this is like the first time anyone in my house has really been sick since March because, you know, I've been going out and interacting with people. Like, you know, usually I work in a school which is full of sickness and my child goes to a school that's full of sickness and we're just, you know, somebody is usually sick.
Yeah.
Like every now and then, even if it's just like a little cough or something, usually somebody is getting sick around here. This time, it's been pretty, I mean, I have allergies in July. That's when my allergies really go bonkers on me. But yeah, it was the first
time.
Seems
like a great time to get the kids back to school.
And then there's that, which is consuming my every fiber of my life as I work at a school and my child goes to a school and supposedly New York schools are going to open, but there's a lot of questions. So,
are there any answers, or is it still just all questions? Because I know Cole's growing through a whole bunch of crazy shit that I'm sure we're going to hear about later on in the show.
Oh, God. I remember, yeah, her and I talked about it briefly, like, last week or the week before. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, announcements aren't supposed... Determinations are still, like, 2 or 3 weeks away. But right now, it's a bunch of planning and hand-wringing and, well, if we do this, then this, and if we do this, then this. Just being ready regardless of what happens. So preparing for all scenarios all at once. It just... Who the hell knows, man?
Yeah.
As more and more states are added on to New York's don't go there list.
Like, what states are you not allowed to travel to?
I mean, it'd be quicker if I named the ones that we can go to. most of the, you know, cases are rising in the vast majority of the country right now. And there's very, very few where I could visit and then not quarantine for 14 days upon return.
Are you even allowed to like visit Pennsylvania anymore?
I think Pennsylvania, I don't remember whether, I think Pennsylvania might not be on the list right now.
Cause I know Tom Wolf gets a lot of shit on Facebook that I see, but he seems to be doing a fairly solid job compared to a lot of the nation when it comes to the numbers.
Yeah, let me see. Oh, yes, we can go to Pennsylvania. We can go to Maine, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, West Virginia, Kentucky, Illinois, Michigan, South Dakota, not North Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, Oregon, and Hawaii. That's it.
Oh, go to Hawaii. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Might have to pass through some other states on my way there. I could make a nice ring, though, like, you know, from Maine down up to Illinois without touching red. Though you're allowed to go through the other ones, so long as you don't spend more than a day there.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, but geez Louise. Even North Dakota, where like 5 people live, they all have COVID. It's great. Everything's great. And suddenly the top executive of the country is saying, oh, you should wear masks. Yeah, thanks, asshole. Would have been nice to hear that like 4 months ago. Thanks.
Yeah, seriously. I fucking... This is why we don't get into politics too much on the show, but I just...
Because you just get mad.
I fucking hate Trump so much.
You'll notice I didn't say his name. I just, I always dance around it. I just like, such a bad job. Either way.
Such a shitty, shitty human being. Like, no matter what you think of his job in politics, good or bad, he's just a disgusting, awful person.
Yeah, he's that too, yes.
Yeah. And he's gross. Like, that Fox interview he did, oh my God, he looks so bad. So greasy and bloated. Oh.
Yeah. He passed like a elementary school, like cognitive test, and he's like, man, that test was hard.
I knew what an elephant was. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm just like, the mask thing just kills me. It's like, yeah, you need to wear a mask. You should wear a mask. Wearing a mask is patriotic. And it's just like, he literally didn't wear one once until 2 weeks ago. Ugh.
Yep, shit.
I know. I've been wearing it constantly for any time leaving the house since end of March. So, yeah. But that's why New York is New York and the rest of the country is the rest of the country right now.
Very true. But we should probably talk about video games.
We should. Let's bring up the mood. We brought it down. Nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, exactly. We got one game to talk about with you that is called Warhammer 40,000 Mechanicus, developed by Bulwark Studios, published by Casito Games and Calypso Media, released July 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. Take control of the most technologically advanced army in the Imperium, the Adeptus Mechanicus. Your every decision will weigh heavily on the outcome of the mission in this turn-based tactical game. Will you be blessed by the Omnissiah? Tim, what is Warhammer 40K Mechanicus?
Jesus Christ, I don't know if I can answer that question. My God. Yeah, so I tend to, you know, as we're reviewing things, I try not to shy away from things that I've, never dabbled in before. Try to break new experiences over myself, though that may lead to some uninformed opinions in some case. But an opinion from an uninformed standpoint is an opinion nonetheless and valuable to somebody.
Yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, I have never played any, I don't know, diddly shit about Warhammer or its 40K brethren. I never got into that. I see Games Workshop and I make the sign of the cross and I step back. I'm not judging people for playing it, but I know what you do with all the money you have now. If you're into Warhammer, I know where all of your money goes. I am not familiar with the lore. I like played the demo for the Space Marine game that came out like a decade ago, whenever that was.
Oh, Space Marine was dope. That game was really good.
So, but yeah, I didn't really play it other than the demo. So I'm not familiar with the lore. I only have the vaguest sense of the universe. And this game does not give a shit if you don't know that stuff. Like, it is daunting. Like, just hearing listening to the characters talk to each other, like, in their Warhammer lore speak is just like, my God, you guys, this is dense. And I'm getting the gist of it, but it's just like, holy crap. Like, I get the idea that you are... your squad, as it were. This is a tactical tactics strategy game. Your squad is made up of these dudes called tech priests, and they are deep into some kind of technology acquiring religion where they are like replacing parts of their bodies with robot parts. They're like all cyborgs, and they have very strict like rules and regulations as to how they are supposed to interact with alien environments and situations so as not to corrupt their knowledge and beings and stuff like that. And there's philosophical debate over whether over how you should approach things as to whether it falls under the guidings of your religion or whatever. And it's just like, whoa, I guess. Like, they do not, there's not like a, this is, here's like a glossary of terms. Let's get you up to speed with the Warhammer 40K universe. It's like, no. It's just like, here you go. Drown in it, suckers. If you're not familiar, you could just drown in this shit. Yeah. So there is that. But anyways, the game at its core is a pretty strong strategy tactics game. It's kind of XCOM. It is XCOM-ish, not in like the combat necessarily, but in a lot of kind of the systems and outside of combat stuff that you do. When you're in combat, you know, you're on a like a isometric grid. You move your characters around. It's less like rooty tooty shooty and taking cover like it is in XCOM, and it's more like cover really isn't a mechanic so much. You're just moving your characters around, fighting enemies, meeting different objectives around the level. There's like different waypoints and stuff to interact with. Your tech priests, as it were, you will outfit them, surprise, with different like weapons and skills and abilities. And you customize like different classes. And again, just like reading through like the class descriptions of how they all fit into your Warhammer society is just like, okay, all right, this guy sounds like a mage sort of deal, I guess, something like that. And this guy is clearly like a heavy warrior. This guy does like support stuff. There's like seven or eight different classes with you know their own skills and abilities as you outfit your squad. Your abilities will key off of these points you gather as you do different things around the level. Like a lot of them have like these pylons, and if you sidle up to them, you'll get like one action point. I don't remember what the exact term for it is. And you have certain abilities that will use those action points, including like the melee dudes, just like swinging your hammer at a man will take like some action points. So usually, you know, you're getting a stock of them as you go. Each of your tech priests has like a little floating skull that you can send out to analyze enemies, and you need to analyze enemies in order to see like how many hit points they have left. So like those are kind of like your main characters. Those are your main dudes that you're customizing and controlling and you want to keep track of. Those are the important guys. There's a lot of missions where, you know, if one of them dies, you might fail the mission or other consequences. But you also and something that I think is cool is you get like fodder, just straight up like fodder guys. Like these are characters that are, or units that are subservient to the tech priests, and they are literally like, you literally just use them as like meat shields to send them up and kind of get in the way and soften up enemies and help you explore the level and take position. And I like having, you know, in a game where, you know, there are consequences to your characters dying, I like having some characters where there's no consequences to them dying, and you'll just get more for the next map or whatever. I appreciate that. I think it's cool. Another cool thing is, rather than just like each mission kind of being its own discrete level, like sometimes you will go into like basically what is a dungeon to explore, and there might be multiple encounters along the way, and there will be rooms where, like, oh, there's some alien artifact in here, like, should you fuck with it, basically, and then you get into your whole religious debate of whether you should fuck with it or not. But fucking with things can have consequences, just like in real life. So that adds like a little bit of like an adventure game element to it. And you can get bonuses or negative effects or whatever. And as you go through those dungeons, like, damage that your main characters take will carry over a bit. So you got to be careful about that. Just another thing to take into consideration, I guess I should say. Outside of combat, there's kind of the overarching plot involves your squad, like, exploring this mysterious lost world with all this valuable information on it. And at the end of the tutorial, spoiler, kind of the world is activated, I guess, say, and like all these undead machine life forms start coming back to life. And so that then creates like the timer, like you may be familiar with from the XCOM days XCOM games, where there's like a deadline where you have X amount of, you know, time, days to spend, you know, doing research, exploring tombs, like doing this, that, and the other thing before the amount of these creatures that is awakened reaches a critical mass that will just overrun you. So you need to get off the planet. So you're trying to get as much done before that happens. And that adds, you know, that kind of time pressure and time mechanic to the game. So it's all very cool and solid. There is a tremendous amount of tweaking you can do to the difficulty in this game. I always, you know, go through all the options menus when I start a game, and just like the amount of difficulty options and things you can tweak with, like, you know, how much damage is done, how much you get of this resource, of that resource, how much you get of like that action point in combat. Like, there's just like a page that with like two dozen toggles on it for things you can do to customize the difficulty in the way the game plays just to your liking, beyond just like an overarching difficulty setting, which is a cool thing that I appreciate. This is a port of a PC game, and unlike a couple other PC ports I covered earlier this month, this game controls it translates pretty well to a controller and playing on a Switch or a TV. This was the Switch version that was reviewed. And I really don't have any complaints as far as how that mapped over. It can be, you know, kind of fidgety, just getting moving your character to like just the right spot, I guess. But in terms of control, it's fine. In terms of like how it runs, it feels a little bit sluggish. Just with, like, primarily when you're in combat, like, your characters, just, like, they just kind of are moseying around when you move them, and, like, their actions are kind of slow, too, and that, unfortunately, made things, like, a little bit more sloggy than, you know, I wish it had run, like, a bit smoother and a bit faster, I guess. Especially, you know, when you're moving so many units around on a map, and it's just like, sometimes it's like, no, at a certain point, this needs to snap a little bit more like that. But it was pretty good. Overall, it was pretty cool. Pretty decent game.
Well, then $40 price tag. What is your verdict?
Oh, wow. That's not too much, is it? I think for Warhammer fans that might not have a PC, though, I feel like those two crowds intersect Like, I feel like that Venn diagram is a circle. But I could be wrong. Maybe they couldn't afford a PC because they bought too much Warhammer shit and they have a Switch instead. I think it's a buy. I think Warhammer fans will eat it up, like, with the density of the lore and the amount of the gameplay. I think non-Warhammer people...
My phone went off.
It might be more of a try just because of the sheer density of the lore and kind of the sluggishness of the gameplay, but there isn't really there's not enough of these types of like tactical games out there, I feel like, besides XCOM. XCOM kind of knocked it out of the park, and I don't feel like there's been too many copycats. Not that this is strictly a copycat. So I think it's worth a try for those folks, but it's certainly a pretty good game.
It seems most of the tactical games I see come out are like fantasy based, so it's good to see something more sci-fi based.
Yeah, they're cribbing more on, you know, your Final Fantasy Tactics than XCOM.
No.
Probably they just looked at XCOM and they're like, that game's too good, we can't match it. It's just too damn good.
All right, well, Tim, we're going to let you get going. We got a party cast to get started. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Let's get it started. And hey, so I actually did go through and cancel the WWE Network.
Did you?
I went through and did it. I'm just like, I just, since you got me into a Wednesday night AEW Dynamite watching crew, that has been filling the wrestling shaped hole in my heart. In a much better way, because I can watch it with people to talk to, but I just have not been able to find the time or to some degree the interest to watch the WWE Empty Arena product the past couple months. So I don't know.
Totally understand that.
Yeah, I might check it out again. Once kind of hopefully things get back to normal. New Japan has fans at their shows again.
Really?
Yes, they started having fans back a couple weeks ago. You know, it's only like a third capacity, and the crowd can only clap. They cannot cheer out loud. But there are fans there to provide some feedback to the wrestlers, which is good. I don't know how you boo. Or you just sit on your hands when you're like, oh, that
just dirty stomp heel on the floor, boo.
Yeah, maybe you stomp for displeasure. But
a whole new way to watch wrestling.
Yeah, I know Vince was like, we're going to have fans back at the end of July, and then that changed. And now he's like, we're going to have fans in September. And I'm just like, dude, what are you...
Give it up.
What are you doing, man? Like, maybe if you have all your events in New York, if things stay the way they are, then maybe you can have something resembling a crowd of people at your show. But I won't be there. But maybe you can. Maybe you can find some people that'll go out. But until then, I am all in with All Elite Wrestling.
Tim Ekibis is All Elite.
I am All Elite. All right. Whew.
Thank you as always, Tim. Always good having you on, but it is party time. Cole is here. Chris is here. Purnell's here. How's everybody doing?
I'm all about that total global saturation there, buddy. Just taking it all in.
Cole's reaction is just,
Yeah, I'm photosynthesizing over here, just taking it all in.
Meh.
That's saturation.
Just meh. We're at $5.99, folks. This is it. Who's going to be here on Thursday, by the way?
$5.99?
Yeah.
We could go for $10 easy. Come on, man. Oh, we're worth more than that.
Womp womp.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, I think I could be here Thursday.
I intend to be.
For now, you're going to be here Thursday, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock for Chris.
And doodly deedly doodlap.
Going to be a hell of a lineup. Our friends Grant and Adam Rippon are going to be here, so it should be a fun lineup for everybody. Be a fun action-packed hour.
Mm.
But yeah, how's everyone doing? How was your weekends?
Well, it was rough. So I think I was on the non-recorded area of the show. So I've been doing a bit of like social hiatus or social sabbatical. So I haven't really been on social media and I haven't really been chatting with a lot of people. I've just been kind of going to work and coming home. And on the weekend, I decided that a way to get away from all that was just to do something I needed to do for a while now, which was yard work, which meant going out in what was apparently like a 98, 99 degree day and chopping wood, as corny as it may sound, chopping wood and putting it into mini bags. It took me like 5 hours, and I'm pretty sure I had like a mild case of, like, I don't want to call it heat stroke, but like a heat hallucination or something, where I was just like barely standing up, and I just was kind of dry mouth. And it's just it was like a weird incident where I was like, I'm almost sure positive I saw a few things, but
Chris is gonna be like, hold my beer.
I know he is. Hell, he probably has that just gone to the grocery store, but like, yeah, ultimately, it was good in that regard. I got some stuff done. I played some video games. I do my stuff at my new job now, which is funny because I already have a nickname, which is Vampire, because I work in the dark, so that's nice. But oh well, it's been pretty good. And also, of course, hop tea. What about you guys?
Chris, how about you?
Well, I moved, so I'm extremely tired.
A lot of outdoor heat.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Texas is brutal. It does not let up. And yeah, I've also been working way too many hours, so just constantly on the move and just sweating and terrible. Terrible. It's all awful. But now I'm sitting in an office that is mine and with a door that closes. So when you hear a cat, it'll be on the other side of the door. And it's a little echoey in here, though, because I haven't moved all the boxes in yet and all the stuff. But, you know.
Somebody got to let the cat in just to wish us luck.
Yeah, I mean, I would, but he's not out there right now. But, he will be, though.
Is that going to be your man cave?
No, it's just going to be my streaming station and the place where I store way too many guitars.
So your man cave. Yeah. Man cave.
It's this place where he goes to twang.
To twang. Twang. It's where I go to be quiet, basically.
That doesn't sound right. It's like, it's where I keep all my guitars. This is where I go to be quiet.
Well, yeah, I can't. I'm in an apartment. I can't just like jam out at full volume. It's all got to be plugins and interfaces and whatever else they call it.
Those hip kids and their digital music.
All you gotta do is go around the apartment complex and put up signs in the doors like Saturday free concert, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, free concert. Just stay at home.
Take a request. I won't play them, but hey, you never know.
Hope you like video games.
Exactly. Hope you like Bubble Bobble.
That one guy's like, I do. That's great.
Speaking of which, I finally got the new Bubble Bobble for Friends because Catherine ordered me the physical Switch version of that game at Christmas.
Like, was it supposed strictly to be my limited?
Christmas present. Yeah, and yeah, strictly limited, yes. And finally got it, so it's quite a lovely thing.
Nice. What comes with it?
Is it good?
A like plastic thing that has like the art on it. It comes with a very hardcover compendium of like every bit of like advertisement and like arcade specs and like all this other crazy stuff. It's just like this Bubble Bobble compendium book, and that's then a soundtrack that covers both the original and the new version of the game, and of course the game. And I'd have to get my box to see anything else, because those are the main things. Though I think it comes with a couple other little doodads.
A compendium sounds worth it alone.
Yeah, it's a really cool compendium. I was like flipping through it and stuff, and I was like, geez, I've never seen any of this before, like at all. So
did they reveal in the compendium that the Bubble Bobble dragons are actually addicted to dish soap?
Ooh, you know what, I didn't read that far, but maybe that is a secret that is revealed.
it needs to be, because I'm certain that's what's going on with those two.
Yeah. And then the game itself, I think Purnell covered that game, right, at some point?
No, that's why I was asking you. Like, I've never played it.
I thought somebody on this.
No, I don't think we got that one in.
Oh, I see. Well, it's pretty good. It's like the thing that I thought was the most funny is that if you lose enough times, or you may be able to turn this on at the start, but you can actually just make yourself invincible just to get through it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I will say I that's a trend that I've come to realize I'm actually okay with in games as long as it's an option. Like, I remember when was it? The first time I saw it was like Mario 3D Land, where you could get the gold, the silver Tanuki suit or whatever, the white Tanuki suit. Yeah. People were online complaining about it. Like, I can't believe that. I mean, you could just like blitz all the stages. Like, well, I mean, it's not like the item isn't in a box that you can choose to hit. I mean, the only thing that sucks about it, and that's just normal in this regard, is that seeing the box is almost like the game saying, so, I see you suck. What's the
And you're like, when the, hey, when the game offers you the invincibility, that's when you're like,
okay, game, I get the hint.
How about
that's why after you die five times on a level, it shows up?
Yes, about five or six times. It's a good number, though. It's a decent amount of deaths in the stage.
I died a lot of times in Super Mario 3D Land.
It gets brutal in the second half, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to get like the secret stuff, and you're like, okay, hope you're good with 3D per some peripheral or vision, whatever.
Yeah.
3D perception.
And I'm not, so.
Oh, well. Aw, Eternal, look at you dropping biddies.
So many biddies. Look at them. And look at his cool computer actually handling them.
I know it.
34.
Dropping bits!
Thank you, George. And thank you, Cole, for the biddies.
Welcome.
Isn't it nice how quick they go on my computer now?
Yeah, that's great.
My fancy new computer that actually runs shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's super fancy, the way it handles that small animation.
Yeah.
God damn it! That small animation.
But... here's the thing, though, that...
Oh, Cole, with 50 more biddies.
I'm trying over here.
That's not a slight against you. That's more like a testament to how tough it is to get, like, quality across Twitch. Like, you have to have, like, a nice computer, like, running at, like, you know, a nice internet running at, like, a super high bit rate just to, you know, accomplish something like, you know... hearts falling into a cup.
Yeah.
Drop them bitties.
Hey, we saw how bad things used to be on my old computer. So
yeah,
I am more than happy having bits drop at a proper speed on my computer, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of charm, it, though.
The slow bitty drop was charming. It was like, look at this.
Well, people are going to have to drop many several hundred more bitties.
Yeah. Just singles for days.
Yeah, just singles for days. Bitties.
Make it rain.
And clearly, Cole can't do it by herself. Clearly, we need like 5-6 people all at the same time, just constantly, nonstop dropping bits and subscribing.
Yeah.
And gifting subscriptions. What else can people do? Make donations all at the same time. Yeah. Down to three, right? 1, 2, 3, go.
Mom tapped out.
How do you start over. Bits? I was just getting to the donate screen.
We made an effort. We tried.
What did we learn, kids? Never try. Probably one of my favorite Simpsons lines. That, and you know what they say? You wake up every morning, you go to work, doing everything really half-ass, because that's the American way.
Oh, man. On that note, should we talk about games? Because we got a couple games to talk about tonight.
Oh, we might as well.
Let me just crack open
games?
The top
tea. Yes, Cole, we play video game. Did you miss the memo?
Maybe.
Oh, man. What are we going to do with you?
Here you are playing video games.
With my gifts.
Lydia Baines.
Oh, Lord. All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Rock of Ages 3 Make and Break, developed by Ace Team and Giant Monkey Robot, published by Modus Games, released July 21st on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $29.99. Competitive tower defense meets arcade action and gets rolled up with Ace Team's quirky Monty Python-esque humor in one giant creative game for the ages. This time around, you can even make your own levels. Chris, tell us about Rock of Ages 3, Make and Break.
All right. Making and breaking. So, yes, Rock of Ages 3. Well, okay, so this is, of course, the third in a series that started, like, almost 10 years ago now, actually. It's, like, on the 360,
It's been a while, yeah.
And the second game is actually on Switch, which is how I heard of the series. And I love the subtitle to the second game. It's Bigger and Bolder.
Like a rock.
Like a rock, like a boulder. So anyways, yeah, Rock of Ages 3, Make and Break. Well, basically, this is a kind of unique hybrid of types of games. So it's basically, well, there's several different things that happen in this game, but the main part of it is kind of a tower defense meets a boulder rolling simulator. I don't know.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So the game's like first stages, like it's kind of cool because it has you like kind of play through the most difficult part immediately, which is the tower defense thing, where basically you have a set amount of resources, and you have basically endless time to set up your entire thing. There's a snaking path between you and an angry cyclops that wants to throw a giant ball of sheep at you. Not in this level, but he just throws standard rocks, but like his weapon of choice is a ball of sheep.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And so basically before he does that, you have to, build up like walls, turrets, little catapults, and, these twirly things that break apart rocks, and, use your limited resources to kind of do that. You can also build, like there's a gold mine, so you can build excavation points next to those gold mines so that people are, you know, mining gold. Now, they won't do that in the static amount of time that you have to set all this up. They won't start doing that until gameplay happens. But when you're done setting up everything, then you, you tell it, okay, start. And then the boulders will start coming, and you basically, your defenses are supposed to keep them from reaching your door, and you can still build stuff in real time. And if it gets finished by the time the boulders get there, then it'll do its thing. Otherwise it'll just, they'll just pass right on through. And of course the object is to not have your door to your castle get hit by those boulders. So that's the RTS part of the game in its entirety. Now, what they also do is that, they have levels where you're the ball, boulder, whatever, stone, wheel of cheese, whatever you have unlocked. There's a ton of unlockables in this game. So whatever you are, like basically you start rolling down this hill, and the gameplay will kind of evoke both Super Monkey Ball and maybe a little bit of Katamari Damacy. The view is behind the boulder, and it's a big 3D space, and you play through the map, and basically you use one stick to speed yourself up or slow yourself down or move left and right. And depending on the stage, the goal may be to destroy as many targets as possible, maybe destroy a lot of things, or just build up enough speed and break down the bad guy's door. And sometimes you have to race against another boulder or ball of sheep or what have you, and sometimes you have to do actually skee ball, where you are the boulder and the last bit of the stage is a ramp wherein you need to like aim and try to get into a high scoring hole, which if you've been to Chuck E. Cheese's, you kind of get it. I don't need to explain skee ball to you. So that's like, and the game kind of like alternates between all of these things in different sets of levels that it has actually set up really nicely on this map with a gorgeous map theme. I really love it, but I'll get back to the music because it's not all great. you sail like your ship around like different periods of time all throughout history and mythology. They keep saying it's a historical simulator, but the first few levels take place in the Odyssey, which has a cyclops. It's not history, it's mythology. Anyway, ancient China and like the Renaissance and like all these other different places, and eventually when you get enough points you can even go backwards and start at the beginning of time, which I have not collected that many yet, so I haven't been there yet. But lots of different backdrops and characters. Every time you access a new level or set of levels, the game will play and this is where the Monty Python stuff comes in. The game will play a vignette or a cinematic where, it sets up like a goofy retelling of the Odyssey, like the Ulysses or whatever his name is, Odysseus. I can't remember my Greek mythology right now.
Me neither.
Sneaking into the cave and blinding the Cyclops and all this other stuff. And it's, you know, it's done in that kind of paper cutout sort of shuffling around way that, you know, Monty Python used to do, specifically Terry Gilliam. Apart from that, I mean, it's not, the absurdity is mostly in the gameplay. Like, the cinematics are funny and charming, but, you know, and it's kind of fun that the characters all kind of, they speak gibberish to each other, even though they're perfectly capable of talking, because when the game does like tutorials or anything where you actually have to listen to what's said, the characters suddenly have real words, which is, I would have thought it would have been really funny if you would have had to go through the tutorials with them going like, yeah, talking to you. Anyways. So yes, that's the single player mode of the game, is basically getting through all these different types of stages, whether it be setting up an RTS, you know, a tower defense kind of thing, or actually playing through the action sequences or whatnot. And then collecting coins, or not coins, but like stars, basically, based on how many stage like goals you accomplish. So a stage might have 3 stars, it might have 2 or just 1. And yeah, you collect them, and then the more you collect, of course, the more stages you can unlock, and of course also more unlockables you can unlock. Hooray. And then on the other side of that, there is the make side, where you, for the first time in the game series, you actually can have a fully fledged level editor of your very own. And this thing is great. I actually had a lot of fun with it, making some stuff. I didn't make anything like good enough to upload to the community, but I'll get back to the community in a second. Basically, it just, you have your exit that they supply for you, you know, the goal, and then the starting point, and then everything else is up to you. You can make the pathway whatever shape you want. You can put literally any asset in the game in, you know, in your way. And some of these get really cool and like complicated. For instance, there's like cannons that when you go through them, they will blast you to a certain other point in the level, and you can stack them. And, you know, there's like all kinds of like possibilities for like physics based fun,
like or chain just make reactions and stuff.
Yes.
Nice.
Or, you know, just make a goofy ass stage with a bunch of frogs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to say, I tried the level creation on the Xbox One, and I couldn't figure it out at all. I couldn't figure out how to place items. I couldn't figure out, like, there was a tutorial and I read it and I went through it, and I don't know if nothing retained or if it just wasn't explained properly. I couldn't figure out how to do a blessed thing on the Xbox, but it seemed like it would be so much easier to do stuff on a computer, which you covered.
Yeah, that's what I was going to was going to say on it, is because while the controls for the action sequence are terrible on a computer, because the mouse controls the camera, which the camera doesn't actually control your boulder at all. It just lets you look around. And then the WASD controls the boulder, which is just not fun to do for me. You know, like, actually, that's the thing that'll trip you up a lot. It's like when you're trying to operate the camera, thinking that it's going to make your boulder go the way you want it to go.
No.
And, you know, for that, the control pad is way better. And the cool thing is that it seamlessly goes between control pad and mouse, just depending on what you're accessing at the time. But yes, the level editor, I started to try it with a controller, and I actually did not learn how to do it with the controller, because, yeah, it's perfectly good with the mouse and keyboard and, you know, being able to just drag and drop things right in, which is exactly what it lets you do. So, yeah, it's, you know, I can't speak to the console versions, but, you know, you just said it's hard. And I did see one other review that said it's really hard on PS4. So
I can definitely say that. I played Rock of Ages 2 on the Switch back in the day. And it wasn't, I don't recall it being too difficult to put stuff down. It was just a matter of like how you work the camera to do it. Cause you could like you could actually do it from like zooming in and out, you know, going to and from the opposing base. And if I remember correctly, you could also get like a top down view where you could like just look down on the field and go, okay, I want to put this right here.
And oh yeah. For placing during the tower defense simulator part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're talking about during, like, this is, they have an actual level editor. So you can design the entire layout of the level. It's not just. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that's, I read that that wasn't into, but now I understand.
Purnell's in his own world right now.
No, that's okay, though, because it's similar. You know, when I was building the RTS stuff, I absolutely wanted to go with the mouse because it was so much easier than the controller. But then the action sequences controller was better. But like I said, the level editor is really cool and robust, and there are community levels, of course. And you can also, any of the stuff of the above that I just stated, you can play multiplayer, including, like I said, playing with friends remotely in this day and age is what you kind of have to do. I tried a couple of community levels, and the funny thing is the number one best rated community level right now is called Destroy All Humans. And they just made this path that's fairly straightforward, but every single block is occupied by a building or a person, and you have to smash through all of it. And then for the second round and forward, it's competitive, so you're against somebody else. And then for the second path forward, your win is determined by whether you can blaze the same path and not run into any extra buildings. So kudos to whoever made that one. I mean, it's a simple idea, but...
That's really cool.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. Basically, as far as this game goes, the level editor is really good. The stages are really good. Love the map. Love the storylines. The only little complaints I had, I do appreciate that they made an effort to keep the physics fairly realistic. Like, the boulders will slow down if they hit something, including other boulders. There's a lot of, things. They feel heavy, which is kind of interesting. But at the same time, when you're going down a twisty, turny, windy path, it's really tough to, make those turns. You really have to slow down and pay attention. And if you're, trying to two-stick it, which I was doing for the longest time, and you're just going to end up going off the cliff several times. So there's a learning curve for the controls in the action sequence. Just saying. Once you get it, it's great. But do expect to spend a little extra time even doing the most basic stuff in the action sequences. The other thing is that the music is apart from the map theme, which, like I said, is really, really good. The stage themes are kind of remixes of public domain and classical music, which is kind of cool. But at the same time, it's come on. I mean, it's, listening to the same over and over and over again was starting to get to me.
Yeah.
But it's really cool the first few times you hear it, because it's got rock guitars in it and stuff. But come on, y'all. The soundtrack, I'm just gonna say, is hit or miss.
Yeah.
Oh, and the graphics, though. The graphics are lovely. I really, really like how the game looks in just about every way. So, yeah, it's a great little game.
I have some minor nitpicks as well. I think menu navigation on console could be improved. I think just trying to navigate through the menus is kind of obtuse, and there's not a lot of information on what you're doing. And then I wish you could access control options during levels. I didn't realize until I started a level that the camera was not inverted, and I went to pause and go to options, and I would have had to go back to the main menu. Luckily, I had my Elite controller, so I just hit a button and inverted my controls.
Nice.
Thank you, Elite controller.
I just now realized that that was the first thing I did as soon as I booted up the game. Let's go to the options and invert the Y-axis. So. Yep. Wasn't even a thing for me. But yeah, it is off by default, so that is a sin.
Yeah.
Maybe more of a tutorial in the actual tower defense part would be good, too, because they do kind of just drop you in.
Yeah.
The only advice they seemed to offer me was that you can pick up bags of gold, and I didn't even realize what the bags of gold were. They were little shiny bits on the map, and you just, click on them with your cursor, if you hit the right pixel, of course.
Yeah.
I accidentally built many walls instead of picking up bags of gold. But that's okay. That was just me being dumb. But, you know, it's not perfect, but I really enjoyed Rock of Ages 3.
Yeah, I think it's a solid entry in the series. I think it's definitely a game that expects you to have played the series before, though.
True, true.
But
like maybe the tutorial's in a prior game or something.
Yeah. But $30, what's your verdict?
Yeah, $30. I think this is good. I think that if you're going to buy it, just make sure that, you know, that you're going to want to like actually play with the level editor, because it really is quite fun. But I mean, regardless of that, the single player campaign is so huge, because you get the access to basically the whole map, like from the get go. And just looking at all the unlockables and also all of the stages, like you can spend a lot of time playing this game,
yeah.
Even though there's only like 5 different ways to play it. I mean, that's still, you know, if this is your kind of thing, then they are generous with the content. So I say it's a pretty solid buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Deadly Premonition 2, A Blessing in Disguise, developed by Toy Box, published by Rising Star Games, released July 10th on the Switch for $49.99. In the year 2005, FBI agent York visits Lacar, a small town in New Orleans, where he encounters a mysterious serial murder case alongside his friend Zach. Purnell, tell us about Deadly Premonition 2.
What? Wow, they actually left quite a bit open there. That's good. I can ramble.
oh, shit. So, what did we do?
You unleashed the beast of Lacar. So, Deadly Premonition 2, as you would probably guess from the title, is a direct sequel to Deadly Premonition 1. I didn't finish my copy of Deadly Premonition 1, so I feel as though I was able to get a decent amount of enjoyment out of this game, though there is one element of confusion that may factor in, but they cleared up during the game anyway. So the idea here is that this game takes place actually in two timelines. Whoa!
Cats are going crazy over here.
For a second, I thought someone was trying to start their car.
Nope, cats are just losing their shit on my side. So you keep talking about the game. I'm going to go check out what's going on.
Oakley dokley. So actually, this game takes place in two different timelines, one being the present timeline, 2019 actually in the game, and then 2005. In 2019, there's a secret agent named Aaliyah, not secret, but FBI agent named Aaliyah, who's actually going to visit with Francis Zach Morgan to discuss details with him regarding a serial killer case that it was supposedly solved by him back in 2005, but turns out there's a reason the question that the case is actually opening back up again, or is not truly closed, which is resulting in them talking to him and also resulting in the game going to the 2005 timeline, where Francis Zach Morgan is discussing the details regarding when Francis York Morgan solved the original case. Now, you might be thinking, Francis Zach and Francis York, what the heck is that about? Well, this game does a weird thing regarding the main character having a form of DID, at least as far as the main world goes, where basically Francis Zach and Francis York are two different people in the same body, and they communicate with each other, but the way it's portrayed in the game is that when York is talking to Zach, it's kind of like he's talking to you, the player, because Zach doesn't outright talk back. It's just him saying, hey, Zach, so did you hear what she said about the XYZ bit? And then, of course, no one says anything, and he might go, oh, I know, it's true, right? It is wacky. I agree with you. And you're like, yeah, I was kind of thinking, so maybe he was assuming that I would agree with his statement or whatever. So that's how I believe it was portrayed. But anyway, so during the 2019 segments, it's kind of just very dialogue heavy, where the main character or the agent is talking to Francis Zach and basically just clicking around the apartment to view different objects to get him to start talking about stuff and investigating his apartment, and ultimately using that to investigate and discuss matters with him and kind of like jog his memory. So there's a lot of dialogue there where they kind of process matters and discuss the case at hand. But the 2005 period is the actual like primary gameplay environment, in which case the main character actually moves around and interacts with the environment. So how this works is an open world adventure game. in which the main character, York, is investigating this crime. And the way it works is that you're on a real-time clock, so to speak. Well, not real-time clock, but like a moving time clock that goes throughout a night-day cycle, where you will occasionally be taking on, I guess, like main quests and side quests that will be doled out either by characters or from a message board available at the sheriff's department. And what will happen here is that when you take on these main quests, you'll be asked to do a variety of different tasks. It might be looking for objects on the main map or going to a different location or just any number of ridiculous things that will ultimately lead towards getting more and more progression in the actual murder mystery. But this game does have an odd element to it in that during the day, combat is held, but I see in both environments, you use firearms for combat. You can use melee attacks or you can use firearms, whether it be like a stun gun that you get from, well, not even a stun gun, a rubber bullet gun that you get early on in the game, or you'll find other guns that you can use with limited ammo also that are actually more lethal. But during the day, you use the guns to attack wildlife, believe it or not. The enemies you fight during the day are wildlife. So you might be fighting squirrels who steal your items from you, or alligators who will crawl up from the swamp and try to bite your ass, or wolves and any number of other things that will attack you. If you accidentally attack a civilian, of course, you will get docked money. And I'll go into what the heck money's all about in this game shortly. But at night, the game does a really weird thing where it basically goes into like an otherworld environment. Think akin to like Silent Hill or something, where the sky turns red and the streets become infested with demonic ghosts that try to kill you. And I actually found that to be especially entertaining and humorous. Also a little freakish the first time it happened. But then I laughed maniacally at the fact that for whatever reason, no one knows this is happening. Like, there's a scene early in the game where you're doing a side quest that can only be done at night. And once you do the thing that you're supposed to do there, a man walks up to you and starts having a conversation with you. In the middle of the night, where just a second prior, a red ghost with scissors was trying to chop your head off. And you're having this dialogue conversation with this guy. And some whack happy-go-lucky music is playing in the background. And no one says, "So, see those fucked up ghosts in the street? What's going on with that?" You know, but like, no one talks about it. It's just an odd thing that exists in this game. And the sheriff even tells you, like, this is a quiet town. Nothing ever happens here except for the fucking red zombie ghost things. But I digress. It's weird shit. So you have to deal with that at night, and then during the day, it's wild animals. And the time passes normally in the game, like I mentioned before, but there are a few ways to make the time pass a little quicker. You can stay at the hotel that you start the game in, and you have to pay money to do that. And if you stay at the hotel, you will recharge your sleep gauge, because, by the way, there's a hunger gauge and a sleep gauge. There are consequences for letting those deplete, by the way. But you can do that, and you'll regain your sleep gauge, but also move the passage of time, and you can choose when you want to wake up. You can get a sleeping bag and sleep near out in the street. If you sleep in the street, though, you could get sick, literally get sick, because if you're not in a safe environment to do it, you could wake up sick or early or whatever. But if you find a trash can you can set on fire, yes, like a hobo, you can sleep near the trash can, safe and sound, and pass time. And then lastly, you can smoke cigarettes and just pass time naturally. And the funny thing about the cigarette smoking bit is the better the cigarette, the longer time, the more time will pass while you smoke it. I'm not a smoker, so I don't understand how that works, but I guess smoking U.S. Golds will pass very quick or very slowly. Whereas if you smoke, I don't know, Hyper Red Sonics, whatever, making that up. You know, time will pass very quickly, and next thing you know, the whole day's gone by. You got fired from your job because you took an extended smoke break. Whatever. But that's how the game works there in regards to passing time. And of course, all the stuff that I mentioned, whether you buy food at the local diner to fill your hunger gauge, or staying at the hotel, or getting your clothes dry clean, because you have to do that too. All these things cost money. And the way you acquire money in this game is actually fairly interesting. You have to
either take odd jobs from the sheriff's office, like I mentioned before, where if you fulfill the obligation, sometimes they'll give you money for completing the task, along with some baubles. And you can also get money from like weird in-game achievements, like traveling a certain distance will get you $100, for example, or shooting a blue squirrel, which is apparently a wild, rare squirrel, is worth $7. Weird stuff like that. In fact, the entire game is just freaking weird. But honestly, I like that about the game. The game is very bizarre, very weird. And also the fact that, remember how earlier I mentioned how Zach and York are basically in the same body via DID, essentially. The thing that I kind of find cool about this is that in game, when York is talking to Zach, he always reaches up and touches the temple of his head. And when he does that, he starts speaking out loud. But this isn't like some kind of weird inner monologue or something that no one hears. Everyone around him hears him talking to himself. This is a known thing he does. And characters will acknowledge, like, I'm getting really creeped out by you doing that, man. But like, actually, as a whole, that main character is just pretty freaking awesome. Between doing weird stuff like that and the other characters acknowledging it, which, by the way, makes the subcast of the supporting cast also very entertaining. I also like the fact that the guy is an insane movie buff in a way that he will constantly reference movies that most of the time, because I am not a movie buff, don't believe they're real, which results in me going to Google and looking them up and realize that they are real, such as one particular movie called Cat People, which the plot of that movie just seemed so odd when he was explaining it in the game that I could not believe it was a real film. It's a real freaking film, and it's fucking messed up.
Wow.
But it's hilarious that this happens in the game. These all throughout these conversations. Now, the game basically goes through like a variety of like story twists and turns, but for the most part, throughout all of this, it's progressing in the manner which I described, which is you going through various side quests and main quests, knocking them out, and fulfilling the obligation to get them done. But there are a few detriments to this game, and they're detriments that are heavily worth describing, because while I personally enjoyed my time with the game, there are some things that I personally feel as though I was able to be more relaxed about, but not everybody's in the same boat as me. So I should describe those things.
Let's hear them.
First thing, this game does not perform well. And when I say perform well, I'm not saying that it chugs or anything, because I have read things where people claim, oh, this game runs at a snail's pace. I didn't experience that, and I was playing it exclusively in handheld mode. But it does have moments where it slows down. In addition to that, and this is in the outside environment primarily. Indoors, it's not as bad, but outside is where the slowdown typically happens. But in addition to that, the environments themselves are fairly sparse. This kind of personally feels like a PS2 game, maybe mid to late life PS2 game, as far as like graphics, graphical quality, and actual like population of the environments and scenery. Not a bad thing for me, in a sense that I've lived through that, so I'm more okay with like playing through stuff in those situations if I'm enjoying what I'm doing. But worth noting, because again, this is a full price game. Second thing is that one of the things that the game allows you to do in order to kind of improve the main character is there's a voodoo shop in town where you can take objects and have the main shop proprietor combine them to provide you with dolls and necklaces. And these things are meant to kind of augment the main character's stats to give you like be able to hold more bullets or increase your firing range or make you less susceptible to sickness, more hit points, et cetera, et cetera. But the way you get these items is by finding little doodads on the ground that are noticed by way of a very, like a shimmering light that you don't really typically see until you get close to it. That's already kind of annoying to look for in an open world game because you almost have to be right on top of it to see it normally. But they do offer you something called concentration, which should be awesome, but actually is even almost kind of makes it more annoying, because the way concentration works is you hold down the button and the screen will turn red. And while it's red, you can't move. You can only turn your head and look around. And when you're looking around, you will see icons pop up that indicate if there's an item or something of interest in that direction. Sounds cool? Well, here's the problem. The icon that it provides you with is very similar. It's identical to the icon for things that you normally do see, such as like telephone booths to save your game or vending machines to buy food. So it's hard to tell if what you're looking at is something that you would have seen over there normally if you ran over there, or if it's a hidden item that you only can see because of using concentration. Mm. It should have made the icon a different color. Furthermore, it doesn't do a good job as far as depth perception is concerned, because you might go into concentration mode and you see like this barf of freaking notification indicators off in a certain direction, but they end up being behind two fences. So you got to go around these fences to go over to where you think there might be a thing, but in reality, it was actually on the other side of the other fence behind the first fence. But the game doesn't tell you that. It just tells you, over there somewhere, there's a doodad. You should go get it. And then, of course, you're wasting a lot of time just trying to find this crap. Ultimately, I just kind of gave up on using it for that for the most part, and I just figured I'll run around doing normal stuff, and if I happen to come across something, I'll get it. And it does help that if you walk over an item, it'll put an X on your map, which means that if you technically have walked past it, like right through it, per se, the game will tell you, by the way, there's something back there. But that's a small convenience that does not fix a larger issue, in my opinion.
No.
And the last thing worth mentioning here for me is that so the side quest stuff. So this game does a bit of a primitive thing in regards to the mapping system. You can put down one waypoint, and you can use that waypoint to tell yourself where you want to go if you're using like the above screen compass that kind of, you know, you turn left, right, north, north, south, east, west. And there's like a little marker that says go this way a certain distance to get to your destination. But and main quests will also show up there too. Sometimes, not all the time, but some of them will. Now, the downside is that the side quests do not show up there. And sometimes they are stupidly vague. To give you an example, one of the very early in-game quests is looking for ingredients to make a recipe. Those ingredients are otherwise simple products, a pepper, some rice, whatever. And my first thought was, okay, you could buy food in this game. Maybe I'll just go to like the freaking hotel grocer and buy them. No, you can't buy those things. So where do you get them? You get them from somewhere on the massive map. But you have no idea where. Because there's no indicator telling you that this is the direction you get this stuff. There's nothing saying you can find rice in this area of the game. It's literally that light flashing bulb that I described. You have to hope that while you're exploring this massive town, you'll just stumble across the one place that has rice on the ground for you to pick up. Stupid. I ended up using freaking Google because I was like, I just want to see what happens when you do this. I think it's worth cheating on this one. But, there's a lot of random quests like that where you gotta have to just find a thing. You don't know where the hell it is. And there's also certain quests where it's like, do this at this point in time to get it done. But I don't know where I'm supposed to go to do it. So it's like, eh, whatever. Guess I'll just get it done eventually. So it's kind of an annoyance in that regard, because while I am a proponent for not hand-holding the player to do every little thing, I do feel as though if you're going to give them a massive map, request that they do stuff, but not give them any clues on where to go and do it, I want some hand-holding at that point, because, quite frankly, this is ridiculous otherwise. Yeah. So that's an old element of gameplay design that I think is for the birds, and that is in this game. But with that said, I mean, all intents and purposes, you could technically not try not to do those things if you just want to play the story. So, but at the same time, you shouldn't really have to neuter yourself like that just for the purpose of it. So it's just worth noting. But yeah. Those elements aside, I honestly enjoyed my time with this game. I actually like the writing, the characters. There are a few things here and there that weren't particularly great, but they weren't enough to make me say I don't like the writing in the game as a whole. Aside from that, I like that because I like the writing, I like the characters, and I like the weird plot elements, and I like the investigation itself. It's a good game as long as you're okay with that obvious old school element that you're playing a Switch, but this game may as well have been a hidden gem from 2005 or something. Literally, well, there it is.
Well, then $50 on it. What's your verdict?
If you're okay with the stuff I mentioned, I think it's a buy it. Otherwise, give it a try.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is a preview of the game Dead Age 2, developed by Silent Dreams, published by Head Up, released on July 16th on Steam Early Access for $17.99. Dead Age 2 is a unique combination of survival management, roguelike events, turn-based combat, classic role-playing game with tons of quests, and a story in which your decisions directly affect plot progression. Cole, tell us about your time with Dead Age 2.
Okay, so Dead Age 2 is one of those games that kind of suffers from not being able to pinpoint what it really wants to be. It has a taste of, we're going to be a little bit of everything, but it never quite nails down one thing to be well.
So jack of all trades, master of none?
Yeah, except for that actual, that phrase is supposed to end up with being better than being a master of none. Or better than, yeah, something like that. But, it would be okay if Dead Age would just, like, pick one or two things to really, really focus on. Instead of just kind of half-heartedly giving you everything. When you look up the game on Steam, it flat out says, oh, we were inspired by The Walking Dead and This War of Mine and Fallout. And you're like, okay, calm down and pick something. So for gameplay, you start off by creating a character who I don't think I ever even fucking saw again. Because then you end up with, you create this 2D character, and then you go into 3D combat, and it didn't look shit at all like you actually made him, and has a different name and everything. I was like, okay, well, this is a thing. I don't know who this dude is. This isn't who I made. also, you can only make a dude. That's a negative. But at least there was some diversity in skin tones, if it actually mattered beyond, like, if the character you made actually mattered anyway.
Yeah.
It is an RPG in a sense that you can, like, pick a class and level it up. But because it's so all over the place, it just feels like one more thing that you have to check on. When you're out with your character, you'll run into combat scenarios. You have a flat map, and you can, like, cruise around the different locations on the map by clicking on it. Sometimes you'll get into combat scenarios. Sometimes it's just like, oh, hey, you found some water or whatever. It almost always leads to a combat scenario no matter what. But the combat scenarios aren't always against zombies or humans. In one instance, I got ambushed by wolves in the tutorial. So this happens early. This isn't any kind of spoiler alert. But again, because the game can't pin down what it is, it's like, it makes these mystical wolves, and the alpha wolf has a magical ability to make the other wolves stronger. And you're like, I thought this was a zombie game. Where the fuck did magical wolves come from? I get the whole, the alpha howls, the others are stronger. But why did we have to make it all magical with, like, purple dust flying around them? I'm very confused.
How are you supposed to stop the zombies?
Huh?
How are you supposed to stop the zombies?
But they're not, like, special wolves trained to stop zombies. They're just wild wolves coming to attack you.
Oh, that's true. Well, maybe they bite you, and then you gain the power to better defeat the zombies.
No, because all that happened when I got bit was I had to use my bandages.
The bandages give you the power, then.
No, the bandages just make you go find more resources. Because this is ultimately resource management, in like the long and short of it. For all of the, this is an RPG, this is turn-based, this is this, it's resource management. You have to be concerned with the resources you have at your base and how much your resources are going to cost you to go out into the wild and actually, you know, look for more resources. And you will perpetually be short of resources. That is definitely one thing that they need to balance. You can't play on a casual or a more difficult difficulties. More difficult difficulties. That's where I'm at today. even on casual, like, you're never going to have sufficient enough resources to do the things that you need to do. So they need to work a little more on balancing that. It is the early access, and it's kind of hard to sit and, like, you know, go hard on it and be like, it has this wrong, it has that wrong, it has this wrong. But it does suffer from a few things that you would just like to see it narrow down while it's in its early access stages. On the other hand, it's almost identical to Dead Age 1. So I feel like I'm asking too much to expect a whole lot of things to be changed. Because it's like, it's the same game. Maybe I shouldn't be hoping for so much. But I don't know. I just had hopes that they would... The first game was in early access for a long-ass time. And before it came to consoles, which is where I played it, it had kind of had a lot of stuff fleshed out in it. And even though it still suffered from that chaotic, we want to be a little bit of everything gameplay, it was far easier to like put your finger on it and be like, yeah, I know what I'm playing. Dead Age 2 kind of suffers like setback rather than picking up where Dead Age 1 left off and feeling like it's a solid game with a purpose that just needs polished. It feels like they're starting from scratch.
No. Well, it's still in early access, obviously. Exactly. It just released in early access. What can they do to steer the ship and correct course?
Stop trying to be everything. That's the biggest thing that gets me about it. It's like the combat in it is like point and click, but it's tactical strategy. So you gotta, you know, move up a road to use this. Like the tutorial alone took over an hour.
Jeez.
When I beat the tutorial, I was like, that was just the tutorial. And I couldn't tell you what I learned. I just, most of it was basic stuff that you already know, like how to shoot and things like that. Because it is just point and click style combat. You know, use rifle, attack this zombie, use bladed weapon, that zombie. I mean, it's not anything that's like over most players' heads. And it's something that a more basic on-screen click this, go there, bye would have been sufficient for. But they really need to just kind of, I don't know, roll back some, pick something to focus on, whether it be the base building or whether it be the combat, you know, or find some kind of more smooth in the middle, happy medium, because this just feels like they've just gone, I like this game, I like that game, I like this game, let's put them all in together and it should be one big game that we like.
No.
But then it just leaves it without any kind of direction. The look of it, I was really hoping like there would be some kind of major graphical improvement from 1 to 2. It's identical. When I saw it, I was like, didn't I already play this? Because I didn't realize that it was the sequel and I had not played Dead Age 2 on Xbox. I had played Dead Age 1.
Yeah.
And I was like, No, this is not the same game. Because sometimes that happens. Sometimes you're like, oh, you played this. Do you want to play it on a different platform? And so then I was like, wait, didn't I play this? And it wasn't. It was, no, this is another, and it's identical. There's no improvement in the graphical quality. A lot of things, especially like the wolves and stuff, often they kind of feel like asset flips. That said, that doesn't bother a lot of people. And if you've played the first one and you liked it, you're already halfway to being a fan of the second.
No.
Because it's a lot more of that same. So, I mean, it's just that there's not a lot that made me go, hey, this is really cool. They've learned a lot of lessons. This is where they're going. It's like, nope, this is still it. Another thing to take into consideration, because this is in early access mode, the ending is temporary. You can beat it, but it's not going to be what the final game ending is. And they have plans to change it. And so don't like play it now thinking you're going to beat it and be done with it and then have seen it all and then be surprised when they're like, surprise, bitches, we changed it. Then you don't get to go, ah, I didn't see that coming. No, it's a temporary ending and you're going to have to do it again. There is like a save point before the final end, where they're like, save here because shit's gonna change after this point. So at least you get a head. Yeah, you get a heads up. I didn't make it that far. I kept dying because fuck those wolves.
Magical wolves.
The AI don't do shit for helping you with resources. They're garbage human beings. you're better off letting them die.
This one still being in early access, is this something that people should be keeping their eyes on? Is this something they should be investing in now? What should people be doing?
I think if you are a fan of the first Dead Age and you were like, that was a badass game, I super enjoyed it, I had a great time, then yeah, keep an eye on it by all means. I don't think anybody needs to be like breaking down doors to buy this game. And that sounds rude and I apologize, but it's more like it just needs that polished time. And a little more work before I can full on go, oh yeah, go ahead and buy it in its current state. It just I can forgive rough edges, but this is raw wood. You know, we haven't even planed that board yet. We gotta get some work in there, and that's okay. Everything starts somewhere, yeah. And I think given that it just came out, it's just in early access, they know that they're going to be putting that time and effort into it. At least give it a watch. But you know, I don't blame
you. Throw it on your watch list.
Yeah, I don't blame you if you want to hold off on it, but at least keep your eye on it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is Cuba City, developed by Pirate Parrot, published by Overgames, released July 25th on the Switch for $6. You're in the world of cubes now, buddy, a world with its own laws and customs. Choose your character and start solving puzzles. Chris, you're in the world of cubes now, buddy.
That's almost a threatening tone.
It is. It's very...
You're in the world of cubes now, buddy.
What are you going to do, motherfucker?
What are you going to do?
Game's very intimidating.
Different laws up in here.
Go circle the environment and see what I can see.
Okay, I'm going to try and make this one fairly quick. So, Cubicity?
Cubicity?
I'm just going to say that thus far, you're keeping it short, isn't going too well.
Well, I was only going to say it two more times, and that's the end of the review. Cubicity. Anyway, no, okay. Well, I'll actually review it.
Try it. Moving on.
Okay. It's a try. Just try and pronounce it. Okay, so Cubicity is a... it's a puzzle game with a isometric view, and everyone is made of cubes. That's the laws of physics in this game. So the way that the game is played is that basically within a certain amount of moves, you need to place your aminal from its starting point to an indicated ending point somewhere else on the stage. Now, the way that this happens is tricky. That's the gameplay part, because when you move this aminal, I'm trying to say it wrong. It's actually hard. When you move it in any direction, it will just slide all the way to the next solid object, like an ice cube, which actually kind of made me think, like, why didn't they make them round then? But anyways, whatever. It actually looks good as squares, so I'm not actually complaining. Just physics-based curiosities here. So, you know, let's say you have a bear who, by the way, the game's flavor text describes the bear as, spoiler, it actually looks like a dog.
No,
I actually like that. And, you know, so you move your bear and there's a bear icon somewhere on there. You have to have that bear stop in that icon. Now, that icon might not be at the end of a wall. Therefore, you have to manipulate in some way the stage to where something is going to block that bear from getting to that bear icon past it, like at the wall. So you might move like your little birdie over there first, and then the birdie will block off the necessary block, and then the bear is now going to run into the bird and land on its spot, and then you can move the bird to its spot. That's at the game at its most simplest. Well, the cool thing about this game, I guess, is that it almost immediately, like the first level is a joke. It's just the tutorial, because you just move, you know, the entire course is closed off except for one line. And that's where the goal is. You just move your character and you're done. And then from there, it like actually starts ramping up difficulty, like fairly steeply, like for the first like 10 levels or so. And then there's a total of at least 95 levels. Now, I say at least because the game lets you look at all the levels. And when you try to get past 95, it's like, coming soon, more ice levels. And I'm like, but it's already ice physics. How is okay? So there's more coming to this game. They gave you almost 100 levels already. So that's already a great deal for $6. But the thing is, like, it starts to ramp up. Like, you know, there's like, you'll have four animals on the stage, and you have to figure out like how to get these guys shuffled around to where you got like the, you know, the thing. And then eventually they start adding other levels where you have to like access a kind of elevator block thing that gets you to the higher level. And the thing, you know, and they also have like little arrows that like, when your character runs into them, it automatically causes them to turn in the direction that those things are in. So like they just start adding in obstacles and like all kinds of like different things. And the game is a real brain teaser. I mean, you have to stay so many steps ahead of what, you know, of the of yourself, essentially, like thinking, OK, I got to do this and this and this and this and this. And that will finally get my panda up in that panda's flock. And it looks like a kid's game. It really does. It sounds like a kid's game. It's got a very delightfully whimsical soundtrack with fake voices and things like that. Like, you know, doot doot doots and things like that. It's cute as hell. But
I'm going to imagine that getting that panda up in that panda's block probably ended up raising the rating up quite a few notches.
Exactly, yeah.
Pernell.
The difficulty is actually like legit challenging for like just spatial awareness and like again it counting steps essentially, like trying to figure out you know, basically playing chess with yourself essentially. Because the thing is that you are rated on a 3-star system, like most games, but the way you get the highest rating is to get your animals where they need to go in the least amount of moves. And the game doesn't have a strict path for that. There's actually usually several ways to get your characters where they need to go with like a very small amount of moves. And I really like kind of appreciate how open the game is about that. So that's basically the whole thing. It is, you know, it's challenging, it's cute, and it's cheap, and you get a lot out of it.
So $6, your verdict?
I think it's a buy it, but I also want to add one more thing. And it could be a complaint, it could not be. So the sound in the game, it has music and sound effects. They toggle on and off. There's no sliders. Even though they appear to be sliders, when you click it, it actually just turns it off. So I want you to hear how loud it is when you unlock a new animal in this game. Okay, I'm going to demonstrate into my microphone here for you. Content warning to everybody, it's going to contain music and then a noise. Okay, I have it set here to where I'm about to. Can you hear it now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to unlock a turtle.
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ.
That took me aback a bit there.
That happens every God. There are 22 animals and then sets of people and things like that and bonus items that you can unlock, and every single one does that to you. I had the game at
ear-shatteringly loud.
Yeah, I had the game at minimum like volume, like where you could still barely hear it, and then I unlocked like a pig or something and it was like, yeah, and like did that thing. I was like, what the So I think the game's a buy it, but do be warned, when you go to unlock an animal, it's going to be a surprise.
It's
going
to sound like Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah!
No, I can't get my voice that high, sadly. I probably could at some point.
Oh, my God.
Greatest. Oh, my God.
All right, well, final game to talk about tonight is called Ultra Hat Dimension, developed by Kitsune Games, published by Radaleika Games. It released July 14th on PS4, 15th on Xbox, 17th on Switch for $4.99. Ultra Hat Dimension is a puzzle game about adorable hats and people getting punched for wearing them. Pernell, Tell us about Ultra Hat Dimension.
All right. So, Ultra Hat Dimension. So the idea behind this game is you play the character B, a young girl, not guy, who won a hat make crafting competition, not a hat, you know, wearing competition, and was transported to a fantastical, fun dimension populated by sploofs, not her local target populated by mundane folk. And throughout the course of this, what ends up happening is she goes to this new location and some shenanigans occurs, resulting in all the sploof. These are the people who live in the dimension where she somehow won this contest, go rogue and decide to start attacking each other willy-nilly. And so now B is trapped in this castle and she's trying to escape while also figuring out what caused this to happen and hopefully potentially stop it. And the way this works is that you will progress through a series of areas. Five levels, each level having, five floors, each floor having about 12 to 15 stages or so. And the way it works is on each stage, the goal is to do two things. Locate a key and then use that key on the door to exit the stage. However, the opposition to prevent you from doing that are the aforementioned sploofs who are angry and punching anybody that comes across their way. So, what's a girl to do to avoid getting knocked upside the damn head? Put a hat on. That's it. So, the idea is that there are four different mask types in the game. And each mask forms what is essentially a faction. If you yourself is able to locate one of those hats on the floor, of which there will be plenty depending on the stage, you will don the hat and thereby makes you a part of that faction, thereby preventing any sploof that is wearing the hat that you're wearing from punching you. So this opens the options for a number of little opportunities you can do. One, if you just want to walk past the sploof without getting hit, you can do that because when you walk by, they'll see you, see you share hats, won't hit you. If there's a sploof that's in blocking your progress, you can push the sploof five squares away from you. And when you do that, the hat that you're wearing disappears. Don't ask me why. I'm not a magician. I just know it goes away. And then the last thing you can technically do with these little buggers is you can actually push a sploof into another sploof. And depending on the hat type that it's wearing and the hat type that the thing it got pushed into is wearing, a different certain effects can occur. They might get into a situation where one spoof will punch the other and move it a couple of two spaces away. You might come across a situation where the spoof will punch the other spoof and daze it for a bit. You might come into a situation where they will go into an eternal cat fight and just not let up, which is very, all those things can generally be good depending on the situation you need to engage. So the loop in this game is to evaluate the environment, both the sploofs that exist on it, where the key is located, and what hats are available on the map, and then try to chart a course using the different hats and the different enemies or sploof characters to progress to the end of the stage. Now, early on, the levels are pretty small, but as you play into the game, the levels become bigger and bigger to the point where you will be making a number of decisions, and if you screw up, it would kind of suck if you had to start the entire level over. But fortunately, every time you make a decisive decision in the game, like pick up a hat or push a sploof, the game will give you one undo, which is basically allowing you to back up the entire play session, up to the entire play session if you want for that stage. So you realize like you made a bad move three moves back. Well, just do three undos and then do what you want to do again and get it right. On one hand, this makes the game a lot easier to play, so it reduces the challenge significantly. On the positive, though, by doing this, it respects a bit of the player's time. So in reality, what it means is that the game itself isn't really less difficult, though I felt like the game wasn't too hard in its own right. But it doesn't make the game less difficult so much as that it respects your time so that you can actually get back to retrying solutions without doing the entire puzzle over again, which honestly, I think would be very player unfriendly if they made you do that. So honestly, I found myself enjoying the game. There's not much payout in beating stages so much as that you just get a quick one sentence snippet where B is contemplating her situation, was like, why are the spliffs? Why are the sploops so angry? Or my mom was really upset about me joining this contest. You know, just general garble that is flavor text.
Bless you. Zeus, no problem. Speaking of Cole, did you play this one too?
I did.
What did you think of it?
This is definitely not the strongest Rattalika I have played. I think the concept is there. I think it's fairly well executed. One of my biggest problems with it, though, is that it doesn't really do a very good job of explaining how the hats technically work. And it took a lot of just wandering around and getting beat up and then finally giving up and looking for a guide to be like, shit, that was dumb and now it makes sense. Once you get it.
I kind of disagree with that, though, in a sense. Not because of it being particularly like well explained so much as that the way they do the stages, they kind of like make you kind of almost force you in those situations. Into it,
but like, I mean, the first one, I was like, okay, there's a key. It takes a couple because like initially you're like, okay, there's a key. And then you work your way toward the door and like, it seems natural. And then all of a sudden there's just things on the ground and it doesn't tell you you can pick those things up. It doesn't tell you how to pick them up or that you know, need to work a way around and not get hit. Like you're sitting there going, okay, but if I cross that and it hits me, do I die? Is that it? Game over? Why is nothing being explained to me here?
They do kind of do a little bits like that. Cause like what it is like during those like moments where like, she's like walking from room to room, she might say, it'll be something like a little generic, mind you. She'd be like, it seems that the sploofs are okay if you're wearing the same hat they are, or something like that. And then, of course, you'll see doodads on the ground, and they almost outright say, push, walk over here to pick up hat. But given that the only thing you could do in the game is walk, like there's no action buttons or anything, you literally would just walk up to it and go, oh, I have this thing on my head. Like, it's a very old school style of play, like a Game Boy puzzle game where you literally just do stuff. It was like, I can see if it was like a bunch of different button combinations you had to press.
No, I'm not saying that it's anything like that. I'm just saying like, if you're not the kind of player who's willing to just go in there, like, I don't want to go jump in and be like, just die a million times. Like, if I'm put in a situation and the game doesn't tell me, hey, you're going to die if you get punched by that, and I don't see any health bar and I don't see any life icons, I'm going to assume that if every time I get hit, I'm going to have to do it over. And so when I'm in that situation, I'm like, well, I don't want to get near anything because I don't know what the fuck's going to kill me. Makes sense?
It honestly does. I play a lot of
roguelites where one hit, you're done.
That's
my first thought. Like I'm gun shy. I'm like, I don't want to walk into there and be like, oh, I'm hit and that's it. Now I have to do it again. Cause then I just get annoyed if I don't know to expect it.
See, I can understand that way of thinking. I think it's just, we probably just approach it from different mindsets. Cause like in my case, yeah. I just looked at it as being like, this is like a little puzzle game thing. This room is like, if I hit this thing and it kills me, it's like, well, I got an undo up there. I'll just use the undo or like, it just kind of like clicked for me. And he's like, okay, do this thing. Oh, okay. It punched me. That sucks. It moves me one square. So it's just like, I just was just doing that thing where I was just kind of just like piecing it as I went. But
I'm definitely gun shy from roguelites. And I'm like, if that punches me and I die, is that game over? Do I have to, how many levels like, am I going to have to be set back?
Like, crap. Yeah. And did you end up trying to walk into the water and realize that the water actually doesn't stop you? You just can walk in the water.
It's not water. It's rugs.
No, but there's like a flow into it. Like you walk.
There's a later part that's water. Yeah. But the first ones are rugs. And like I sat there and I was like, can I step on that? What happens if I step on that and I die? I'm going to be so pissed. Like, make the rugs a different color.
It was like a bridge. Like, it was like a line that goes over, and then it was like and it flowed. Like, it actually, like, had a flow animation.
Those are like, little creeks, but the other ones are rugs. And I was like, I'm going to die if I step on it, because I thought it was water. But yeah, you can just walk across the water too. And again, I wasn't brave enough to try that because fuck it, everything kills you. I don't know. I'm not starting this shit over.
Nothing safe in the Ultra Act I mentioned.
I feel like you two are spending way too much time talking about this
game. It would have been a very different game if it had had my roguelike tendencies in it.
Poor B, he didn't sign up for this shit.
Yeah. Like I thought it was, it's one of those, it's relaxing and easy to play, and it's like, okay, fine. But at the same time, I just found myself intrepid over whether or not to do anything until I just flat out figured it out or watched a video. And then after I watched the video, I was like, okay, not everything's going to kill me. I don't have to do this 700 times. I can just go. It was easier, but I had to get over that gun shyness first.
So it's a you problem, not a game problem.
Probably. I mean, at least some kind of explanation that, hey, you're not going to die 100 times here if it punches you would be nice. But it's fine. And I didn't see what Purnell's talking about. I don't know if that was like on a loading screen or something, but I didn't see those tips that he's talking about.
Oh, it's like every time you would like beat a stage and you go to the next stage, it had that screen where she's like walking in the void or whatever, and it's like one sentence. And it's not like a blank.
I had the game installed on a solid state drive.
No, that might be it. So,
wait, it didn't do those sequences? I didn't even think it was like a loading screen so much as just like a, like the reward for beating a room was like her stating a giblet.
No, it would just go room to room.
That probably makes a big difference too. Because each time you go to another room, between the two rooms, she would walk across the screen and she'd make a comment. And sometimes it's a general flavor. Like I said earlier, like my mom didn't want me to do this, but I wanted to. So yay. But sometimes like in the early part of the game, she'd outright say things like, it seems like when these two get together, they'll just start fighting or something. And it's just like, okay, that gives me the impression that maybe they'll fight if you put them together. And stuff like that. And of course, the other thing I meant to mention, though, before I forget, is that at a certain point in the game, they do give you one little add-on. Because normally, for the most part, they give you everything early on. But this one add-on is when you press the trigger button, and you bring up a bit of a diagram in the corner, which is intended to show you what happens when one hat collides with another hat. I barely use that because, for me, I just figured I'll just push the guy, and if I don't like the result, I'll just back it up. So I can just do an undo. But that graph is meant to give you the display to say, hey, if you push this guy into that guy, they'll catch fight. You push this guy into that guy, he'll punch him out the way. So which decision do you want to make to progress through the puzzle? I will say that complaint-wise, the only complaint I personally had was I wish there was a run button, because when the levels start to get bigger, and the main character is still walking one square at a time without jacking up, increasing the speed in any way, it feels a little slower than I would like. But that's just because I'm impatient. But a run button would have been nice.
Yeah, it would have. Well, I can agree with that. I'm always complaining about shit being too slow, though. Yeah. So that's me. I wasn't even going to bring it up because I was like, I think that's just me being impatient.
Like, for those who haven't played this game, if you played some older, like, this is an odd one to claim, but if you play like a general SNES RPG that doesn't have a run button and it was one of those like square by square movements, or say Final Fantasy Legend on the Game Boy, that movement speed, but with large spaces.
Well, we're spending way too much time talking about this game. $5. What's your verdict?
Buy it. Go to the Ultra Hat Dimension. I had fun there.
Cool. Yeah, fuck it. Why not? It's an easy enough completion, and you'll get through it.
It's a Rattalega, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, don't be gun shy and be like, oh, I've played 900 roguelites lately and everything kills me. Then you'll be fine.
Just put on a hat and go to the ball and get punched in the face.
Yep.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We survived through another one. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks to Tim for being here as well. I guess I'm going to see all of you on Thursday. So,
yeah.
I'll bring my best hat.
Cool beans. Anyone have. What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
I was trying to remember the sale that Chris made earlier that I already forgot.
God damn. That was scary, Purnell. I don't know what that sound coming out of you was, but it freaked me out.
Just cut the show before that sound or we'll lose the two listeners we caught.
Oh, nonsense. That just let them know that they're in for a treat, a cubicity treat.
I think here at the end of the show, only one thing needs to be said.